Welcome to Curva Mundial.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Curva Mundial. I am your host, Sal Bono, and today my next guest comes from one of the most talked about bands around, and I am so happy to have him on. He is the bassist for Pigs, 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 Pigs. Please welcome to the show, Newcastle supporter, John Michael Joseph Headley. Welcome, Johnny.
Hello there. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the wonderful intro. Oh, you're very welcome. Well, wonderful band, wonderful musician, deserves a wonderful intro.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Johnny. Since this is an audio podcast and no one can see what we're doing, Johnny's wearing a vintage Milan top, which we will get to vintage clothing later on. But this episode is being recorded as Sandro Tonelli has left my team, or on the process of leaving my team, to go to Johnny's team, which, you know, I aired some grievances there, but I'm very excited to for a good person to have a good player, and hopefully Sandro does well. But I hope I had enough pigs in the intro. The band, better known as Pigs Time 7, and truly represents the sound of what I think comes from Newcastle. Now, having never been to the city that has given the world delicious brown ale, what is your hometown Newcastle like? Take me on a walking tour of that city.
It's quite a small city, really. It's got quite a town, sort of a large town feel to it, I suppose. It's a very friendly city. I think a lot of people come away from the city feeling like they've been very welcomed. And yeah, there's lots of very beautiful architecture. I think my partner actually was telling me that we managed to not get bombed very much during the Second World War. So a lot of the original sort of history within the city walls still remain. So it's a very beautiful city, but yeah, very small, compact. And we've got the beautiful Tyne Bridge, which I believe was designed by the same guy who did the Sydney Harbour Bridge. So it's quite a similar looking bridge. That's quite a prominent feature in the city on the River Tyne. Yeah, lots of pubs, lots of venues. It's quite renowned for its drinking culture, you could say.
Okay.
In a lot of respects. But not everyone's drunk, just, you know, most of us.
Hey, that's totally fine, as long as everyone's, like, you know, responsible drunk, I suppose.
Everyone's responsible around here, that's for sure.
It does seem like a close-knit community. I mean, and yeah, despite the fact that it is, like, as you perfectly said, like a large town, you know, it was highlighted in the footballing film Goal, The Dream Begins, which showcased the working class town that is cold and wet and moody, and you really got to earn your stripes.
Yeah.
To say the least. You know, was that a correct depiction of the city, of the town?
I mean, it is historically known for its kind of surrounding villages, for its sort of coal mining. So yeah, I mean, it is, a lot of the surrounding towns are pit mining villages. So it's, and a lot of shipbuilding happened in Newcastle as well through the ages. So it is known for its kind of hard-working people. Yeah, that's certainly true. It's been a while since I watched Goal, actually.
Yes,
but I did see there was a piece about a lot of South American footballers and some English footballers that saw that film, and they've got a special place in their heart for Newcastle as a result.
Right.
I think particularly Callum Wilson said that, you know, he watched the film when he was younger and thought, wow, it'd be amazing to walk out in that stadium. And he's doing that now, week in, week out. And I think he's very happy about it.
Great. You know, the team has done very well over last season, thanks to the new owners, the controversial ownership that is there. But
yeah,
they ended up now qualifying for Champions League and could be on the verge of really contesting and pushing for a Premier League trophy. You know, what is that? What does that mean to you? How does that all feel?
I mean, when the team's doing well, you can really feel it in the city. You know, there's definitely a lightness in the air. People are really happy. You know, everyone's talking about it. If we've won a game, you know, I remember years ago, got in the match and we'd beaten Chelsea against all the odds. And I went to get some food afterwards. I went to get fish and chips, actually, very English. And the woman behind the counter was like, "Did you see the score? Did you see the score? We beat Chelsea." And I was like, "Yeah, I was there." And she was just so delighted about it. So I think if we actually won anything, the city would be, it'd be bonkers. Everyone would be so delighted. But yeah, I think it means so much to people. You know, the city, the stadium's right in the middle of the city centre. Like, it's all, a lot of things are centred around the football team. You know, it's so central to people's lives. And, you know, it's just such a special team for so many people, including myself. I don't know how I'd react if we actually won something. I've never experienced that feeling in my life. As a Newcastle and England fan, you know, I've never had that feeling. Been close lots of times, but yeah, I can't quite imagine what it would be like if it actually happened one day. But I mean, it's not too unrealistic to think that we might be on the verge of winning something sooner rather than later.
It is quite astonishing, and it is quite like an interesting thing for me to see football fans of teams that haven't won. And yeah. And it is quite symbolic that the stadium is in the center of the town, because yeah. Newcastle is the team. You know, did yeah. you have, growing up, did you have any other choice to support any other club, or it had to be Newcastle?
I mean, I didn't actually grow up in Newcastle. It's my dad's fault that I'm a Newcastle fan, you could say. It's a lot of my passion for Newcastle is as a result of my dad. I mean, he was born and bred in Newcastle. Was born in Elswick, which is like 5 minutes from the stadium. You know, he was very passionate about the team. He went to, I think, his first games in the 1950s. You know, he was a young boy when he first went to the match, and continued to do so his whole life. And I remember, I think I was about 7 or 8, 1993, 94, and he was watching highlights of a match on the news where we'd just got promoted to the Premier League for the first time in sort of 93, 94. And I've just have a vague memory of seeing how excited my dad was and how passionate he was about this thing that was happening on the telly. You know, I obviously knew about football a little bit, but seeing just how excited he was about Newcastle being promoted from the league, I do just remember thinking, I want a piece of that. You know, that's that feeling that I'm getting from seeing my dad's reaction to that was just quite overwhelming. And I remember from that moment on sort of seeing those black and white stripes, and it really kind of meant something to me, like more than just supporting a football team. Almost, it was this kind of added bond that I found with my dad, which was this really special thing. So it was I had no choice beyond that point, really. I mean, that moment kind of made my mind up for me. So before long, he took me to my first game, and I was just completely hooked, absolutely hooked. And I still am, really, to this day.
Don't let the kid inside you grow up. Like, that's the best
no,
part.
Never, never.
Yeah, and you've been a season ticket holder for many years, supporting the club through thick and thin. And,
yeah,
you know, so how big of a deal was it for last year, as we talked about, they had such a great year, but they finished above Liverpool, Champions League spot. Now, again, we hinted on the fact that like we could be, or Newcastle could be pushing for a title, could be pushing for something. Yeah. And you expressed what the mood in the city is like, but how big of a deal was it just to finish where you did in the 2022-23 season?
I mean, it still feels surreal. Like, did this actually just happen? You know, it was, and there was quite a few there was a period in the season where we were drawing a lot of games and it was kind of looking a bit uncertain. And then they turned the form around again and managed to just finish fourth, which is unbelievable. I still can't believe it's a real thing, but it is. But everyone's just totally buzzing, just so excited about it, and just Champions League football being at St James's Park again is just such an exciting prospect. You know, along with having a season ticket, you know, we went to a lot of the cup games and a lot of the Champions League games back in the 90s and early 2000s. So I've had a taste of what it's like to be in St James's Park on Champions League football night. And it's just totally electric. You know, some of my best favourite memories as a fan have come from Champions League nights at St James's Park. So for that to be coming back around is just mind-boggling, actually. Given how terrible it's been for so long, for us to somehow be in the Champions League again, it's just, it's quite hard to comprehend, to be honest.
It's kind of though, you've been in that stadium now as we've seen an incline, but you've also been there in the shit, like when it's been totally bad, crap.
Yeah.
What is the mood among fans? Like, is it something that the chants never stop? Like, if the atmosphere still stays the same, good or bad? Like, how are the supporters, and what is that like when the team is just absolute rubbish?
I mean, if the team's doing badly, the fans let them know. You know, it's, if things are going bad, they'll be, the fans will get on their back. You know, it's, but when things are going good, the atmosphere's electric. When it's boring, some, like, there was some, felt like years. I mean, it was years. It felt like St James's Park was a library. You know, it was, there was so little happening, no chance of winning any trophies, or, you know, we might just survive in the league. But it was just the best. Actually, I recall the best part of the match was before the whistle went at the start. Like, when the referee blew his whistle, it was all really great up until the game started, and then everyone was just like, oh, this again. So it's been a roller coaster for me going to the match for all these years. You know, I've seen everything apart from us winning anything, obviously. But I've seen so much. But yeah, the fans will be there through thick and thin. They will, regardless of how badly we're doing. You know, I mean, we got relegated twice under Mike Ashley, and there was still 52,000 fans there every week. You know, playing in the league below. You know, everyone's just, we'll get behind the team no matter what's happening. But I mean, there was a period during the Mike Ashley era where people did stop coming. You know, they were so downtrodden and fed up with how things had been going for so long. They were just like, I can't justify coming to the game anymore. I can't keep doing this because it's just depressing. And there was a few seasons where, you know, they hadn't sold out season tickets, and just before COVID, they were giving away season tickets for free. Like the second half of the season, they were giving them away for free because they just couldn't sell them. But now getting a ticket's like absolute gold dust. You can't. So I think that just shows you how quickly things have changed as well, you know. Because under Mike Ashley, the former chairman, it was 16 years of just absolute misery. It was terrible. But we kept going, you know, we were still there. You know, it's your team. You can't just abandon them, you know. But things have changed drastically, which is, like I say, really hard to comprehend with it being so bad for so long.
It's funny because whatever plan that the new ownership has, it seems to be working, and it's worked just even in the first year. You see how you can throw money in a club and not win. PSG, outside of the domestic league, of course.
Yeah. But
United, Chelsea under Todd Boehly.
Yeah.
I mean, a billion spent and looks just even worse than before. You know, City took heavy investments and it finally, you know, they finally win the Champions League after, you know, 12, 13 years.
I mean, Everton spent half a billion or something over a few seasons and have nearly gone down. So it's, yeah.
So, you know, where do you see and hope for this club to go from here with all this investment that's being made?
Well, I think Eddie Howe in charge seems to be the perfect guy for the job right now. I mean, it looked like he was bottom of the list of the managers they were trying to get, and then he came through. And people were kind of like, oh, that's a little bit underwhelming as an appointment, you know, we're given all the money we've got and all the people we tried to get. But I think he's been perfect, and he's very well, you know, he's level-headed. I think he takes certain players under the arm and gives them a lot of encouragement in the right areas, and he's able to get so much out of the players that are there. You know, the majority of the team were there when it was bad. You know, it's not like they've completely transformed the team. But I think moving forwards, Eddie Howe's a strong leader for that group, definitely. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't get too ahead of himself. He kind of takes things as they come, you know. But I think, yeah, having him at the helm's going to work wonders for us. I think he's been the best signing for us, I'd say, amongst thus far. Yeah.
All right. This is how we're going to merge into the kit section now. Because certain teams have just got a certain look that is truly the definition of iconic. You know, Boca Juniors, blue and gold. AC Milan, as you're wearing, and I love red and black. Inter, blue and black. Yeah. Madrid, the all white. The other black and white team, Juventus. You know, we live in an era now where every team has to have like 100 different styles a season. But Newcastle is standing firm with their home and away classic kits. The traditional black and white. Like, what does that say to you as a collector and as a fan?
I mean, it's an interesting one. I mean, it's just got an iconic look and feel, and it makes you feel something seeing those black and white stripes. I don't know where the importance of black and white stripes come from, but it just has such a powerful image for me. And I think, yeah. You couldn't dump the black and white stripes. There's no way of that happening. But yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it, really? How a team gets its identity in that way. But yeah, I don't know what it is about the black and white. It just feels right.
It is something that it's the perfect branding too. And I know, like, I hate using that term, and especially in football.
Yeah.
That's what everybody wants now, or every new ownership is just like, it's all about branding. But
yeah,
Newcastle, it's immediately, and I don't know if it's because of the film or because of Alan Shearer or because of just the legacy and history that you all have had, that immediately, like, there's two, to me, in my eyes, there's two black and white teams in the world. It's Juve and it's you guys.
Yeah. So,
and it's those zebra stripes that you have, you just know. And you also, I think also it's kind of such a symbol of just the town and the fans of just, you know, that if you're going to St. James's Park as the away team, this is not going to be a walk in the park.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's a pleasant stadium for people to come to visit. I mean, of late it hasn't been, but yeah. But I think as well, actually, Newcastle being a bit of a party city, I think the away fans do enjoy coming to Newcastle to sample a bit of that party that goes down. But yeah, footballing, I mean, as well, they sat where the away fans are sitting. I don't know if you've ever seen, like, where the away fans are in the stadium. They're sort of right up in the gods. So I think it'd be a bit annoying coming to St. James's Park as an away fan, because you're like, the pitch is so far away, I can't see it. But yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, when I first started going, it was 95 was the first season I had a season ticket, which was an amazing time to have a ticket. And the fact the away fans were right next to the pitch. So when they extended the stadium, they were like We need to do something about that. We need to stick them right up in the gods. Because they did used to be right on the pitch, really. But yeah, they've sorted that problem out.
Awesome. You know, I know you're an avid kit collector. I used to only collect kits from the Italian national team, AC Milan and Palermo. Yeah. Then the pandemic hit and I got bored and eBay was readily available. I've amassed a collection I didn't expect, but, you know, what are some of your favorite kits that you have?
I mean, I've got many. I've got probably close to about 300 shirts. It's quite a difficult question to answer that. I think a recent one I got hold of, actually, is a 1998 Colombia shirt, an away Colombia shirt with Asprilla 11 on the back, which is that high up on my list. And as well, my partner actually got me this for Christmas. It's a jumper sweater, but it's France. It's an Adidas France sweater from 1984, which I actually feel scared when I wear it because it was quite expensive. You know, I'd had my eye on this for years, maybe 10 plus years, and she surprised me with it one Christmas and I couldn't believe it. And I think I've only worn it a handful of times because I'm terrified that something had happened to it. But I think it actually belongs in a frame. I think I will get that framed. I'm that level of collector now where I'm just a bit scared of certain shirts getting damaged. But I've got so many, you know, I find a lot of football shirts in secondhand shops, which is a good place. Like, you've got to look quite often, but I found a 1983 Newcastle shirt in a charity shop made by Umbro. And I got it for about £3 in a charity shop. But it must be worth sort of 200 or 300 quid. You know, it's a rare, very rare football shirt. So, that all started for me when I moved to a place called Preston Manchester, after being at university in Preston with a band. And I was very skint, didn't have very much money. So I was looking for a job and I thought, I need to work out how to earn a bit more money to pay my rent. And there was a shop at the end of Oldham Street in Manchester that it was like a warehouse for secondhand clothes, you know, vintage clothing. And I'd sift through there, and quite often there'd be a really good football shirt that had kind of slipped through their net and they hadn't put in their main shop. It ended up in the warehouse. So I found so many things in there that I ended up selling on eBay. So I kind of, that was a process I went through, being a buyer and a seller, you know, to sort of pay my rent. But it was specifically really vintage football shirts, and I found some absolute beauties that I wish I still had. You know, it was like 1978 Hamburg shirt, there was a 1976 Schalke 04 shirt, like things like that. There was a really, really rare Borussia Dortmund third shirt from 95-96. It's like white and black, which is so rare now. And I had one and I sold it on eBay because I had to, because I was trying to pay my rent, you know. But it was sad. That was the beginning of me kind of collecting in a way. Like, I kept a few little shirts here and there, sold some. And then over the years, when I kind of had a more stable income, I started to buy shirts to maybe sell, but then I couldn't sell them because I liked it too much. And I didn't really realize I was a collector until it was too late, I think you could say. Before I knew it, I had about 300 shirts, and I kind of accidentally realized that I was a collector all of a sudden. But now I can't help myself. I just love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, I get that. I get that addiction. I get it very well. Yeah. I've had to stop because I've just amassed too much. Not 300, but yeah. I'm just also like, am I gonna wear these? What am I gonna wear? You know, it is funny now that kit collecting has, especially in America, has become like sneaker collecting. But you also have like so many like hype beasts worldwide jumping on the hottest ones, like Venezia couple seasons were all the rage, for example. You know, what are the kits, like, when you're looking for them, what are the ones that you're looking for? Like, what do you want to go for?
I mean, I do like a particular era, I suppose. You know, the 90s, 80s, 80s is quite a difficult thing to get hold of. But just as well, Adidas, like vintage Adidas really does something to my insides that I can't really explain. You know, it's like you say, it's an addiction. I'm kind of chasing this thing, but it's definitely a vintage Adidas style, you know, and certain templates and certain eras, certain like international competitions, you know, like Euro 96. There's shirts from, you know, the Spain shirt and the Croatia. Like, there was, the thing is, because it was such a, when I was starting to really get into football and I really started to notice the shirts the players were wearing, and it kind of, it's like a melancholic nostalgia thing that you kind of maybe trying to, you know, relive something from your childhood a little bit in a way, in searching for a piece of something you remember experiencing when you were younger, I guess. There's part of that.
And it's one of those things where I sit here and I go, in America, especially in the 90s, early 2000s, but I'm as old as that France shirt that you have. So it's that, you know, the protected piece of glass one. It's so it's but it's one of those things where nothing was available here. Like, it was always, I'm blessed to like have family that would come from Italy, or family in America that would go travel to Italy and visit other family there. And always someone would bring me back something football related, which I was very excited by.
Yeah.
But you couldn't get anything else. Now, forget it. Now it's, you can get anything you want. But I'm sort of just trying to pack a hole, I guess, or fill a void that I didn't have.
Yeah.
I don't know. 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
But it does, for me, I sit here and I go to myself, like, it does feel a bit ridiculous, but it's not though, at the same time.
No. No, it's, I think it's actually really important. You know, it's, I don't know whether I'm trying to justify this horrendous addiction I've got here, but no, I think there's definitely a seriousness to it as well. You know, keeping a part of, like I say, experiences from your childhood alive, you know, it's a football shirt's got a powerful emotional draw for me, which I don't know if that's a good enough justification to having 300, but, you know, there's definitely more to it than just wanting to buy a football shirt. There's a lot of layers of emotion there, almost, which might sound ridiculous to some, but it makes sense to me. So, and I'm not going to stop.
I'm co-signing on all of this. I also think that it's important to, like, I think as we get older, and I don't know if it's something that, like, our parents' generation or grandparents' generation, when we get older, we're supposed to just be an adult and, like, sort of, you put your dreams, I guess, or like the things that you loved as a kid, that like childlike wonderment aside, to be an adult. But I don't know, we live in a world now where like there's still sort of a pandemic, there's like fucking, we're on the cusp of World War III every other day.
Yeah,
I don't know, like, in childhood innocence doesn't actually sound so bad anymore.
No, totally. I mean, me and my partner the other day, I mean, we're both in our 30s, and we were sat just watching the television, and we were like, you know, it's pretty cool being an adult. We can just sit and watch whatever we want on the telly and just sit and eat chips if we want, and no one's going to tell us off. So it's just, just keeping that little spark alive instead of, you know, worrying about being a boring adult all the time, you know. So,
there's enough bills that'll make you do that and just be boring, but we can have fun. Enjoy it.
Yeah. And when I do get some money come in, I go and buy myself a football shirt.
I like it. I'm going to start trading links with you. Like, check this one out, Johnny. As stated earlier, you're in one of the coolest bands around. Pigs times seven. For the last 11 years, you have been melting faces across the globe with your sound and style, yet you all seem to do it with a smile on your face. So how much fun is it being in this band?
It's a lot of fun, particularly being on stage playing. You know, I think if you've been to see us live, you can see the kind of faces we're pulling. It's like, it honestly is like a workout. You know, I don't really do much in the way of exercise, but when I come back off tour, I think I'm pretty fit and healthy. You know, it's a full-on workout, and it's really fun. Just, it's like an opportunity to be someone that you can't be in day-to-day life. You know, it's kind of an opportunity to just be like, I'm going to pull this stupid face and I'm going to headbang so hard in front of, you know, 1,000 people, you know, because ordinarily I'm sitting at home with the cat. You know, it's an opportunity to just let loose, and, you know, it opens up this other side of your personality that can't really see the light of day very often. So it's a really fun, cathartic experience to just have the opportunity to do that on stage. You know, it's really a fun, exciting way to live your life, and I'm very happy to be doing that. And it's, you know, we're all best mates. We've known each other, most of us, since, you know, high school, since we were kids. You know, so we're still rocking, and we're going grey now. You know, we've got grey hairs coming through, and we're still at it. So that, I think, highlights the bond we've got amongst us, you know. And we're still having fun, and that's, for me, what it's all about. You know, nothing else is important in that respect in the musical industry. It's all about having fun, totally.
100%.
Oh, fantastic. And the fun, as you said, like, shines through on stage. It is, you can take a venue that could have like the greatest air conditioning system and break that system, because the amount of sweat that you all drip off is it's almost scary. Like, I'm like, they're gonna get dehydrated, like they're gonna all faint. It's quite astonishing. But it also, the fun and that energy translates when you're listening in with just a really good pair of headphones on the records. You release your fantastic new album, The Land of the Sleeper, in February 2023. You hit the road soon after. What was it like putting that record together and hitting the road, especially after the last 3 years the world has just gone through?
I mean, it was a relief to be finally sort of all back together doing our thing again. And each of us individually had kind of been working on stuff at home. And then, you know, we just record little bits and bobs on our phones or on the laptop and just kind of have a little idea of what we might want a song to sound like. And then, for us all to finally get back together and work on these ideas and mold them into pig songs again was such a good feeling. And we booked a studio in the Welsh countryside. It's like slap bang in the middle of Wales. We booked a studio there for sort of, I think, 5 nights. So we all went there. There was no sort of outside distractions. We were there solely to just work on music. And we basically came away after 5 days with a whole new album. Like, we'd kind of demoed that. And then a few months later recorded it. And then, we've done a whole lot of touring this year, which has been, felt like a dream, you know, getting to America for the first time. We spent a month over there, a few shows in Canada as well. Tons of shows in the UK and tons all around Europe as well. So it's been we've done kind of 55 shows or something in 3 month period, which for us is quite a lot. And coming out of doing nothing for so long, you know, it was a real workout. But we're all just really happy to be back doing it. And I'm looking forward to getting out and doing more.
Now time for a coffee break.
Curva Mundial is sponsored by Mod Cup Coffee in Jersey City. But you can get it anywhere in the world from modcup.com. Mod Cup, drink modern coffee. Use code MUNDIAL for 10% off your first order.
So now we're going to enter into the final part of the podcast. Johnny, I want to thank you so much for coming on. We're not done yet. I'm going to ask you three rapid fire questions that I ask every guest. So if you could bring back one retired player to your club, alive or dead, a former Newcastle player, who would it be and why?
A former Newcastle player or just a former player?
Former Newcastle player.
I mean, you probably get the same answer from a lot of Newcastle fans, and I'm going to try and be less obvious and not say Alan Shearer. But I mean, you'd have him back in a heartbeat. But as I mentioned before, Tino Asprilla, he was such an icon. Like, I absolutely loved him. He wasn't there for very long, but he left such an impact on me. He was so exciting to watch. Like, he was a player that I'd describe as a socks down player. You know, his socks are halfway down his legs. His shirt's untucked, his buttons are undone. Like, he kind of looks, his necklace is out. He looks like he doesn't really care. But there's things he does with a football were just absolutely mind-blowing. You know, it was like his legs were made of elastic sometimes. It'd be elastic legs with glue on his feet. You know, the ball just stuck to his feet and his couldn't make sense of what he was doing. But it just, yeah, I'd love to have him back doing his thing at Newcastle.
Love it. I remember him and I remember... Yeah, he always looked like he just showed up from the pub and then the pitch.
That's what I loved about him. Just so nonchalant, you know, like he didn't care, but he obviously did care and was very good at football. But he was certainly, someone I'd have back, definitely.
Love it. Now, if money is not an option, if your club could sign one active player today, who would it be and why?
One active player. I mean, this might seem too obvious, but Messi.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine having Messi at your club. That'd just be supporting a team that's got Messi in the team. Like, you could just sit back and relax, couldn't you? It just wouldn't be stressful in any way. You could just sit down, put the kettle on, and just watch genius happen.
It's true. And what's funny is that there was a moment where it looked as if Newcastle were going to make an official bid for him. Once the rumors started coming out that, like, he's definitely not sticking around PSG, there was obviously the Saudi deal that was on the table, which was astronomical, that we know he turned down. But Newcastle were rumored to be seriously putting in like a nice package for him. And obviously he went to Miami instead, but that almost became a reality. Does that make you a little bitter?
No, I mean, I'm fine about that, I guess. I mean, if it was a few years ago, I would have been I'd like Messi at the club when he was, you know, a few years younger, maybe, because he's kind of, 36, 37 now. But no, I mean, we're linked with everyone now, I think. So I can't really be that bitter. Be bitter about every footballer that doesn't come to us.
I just, you know what it is? I hold the Sicilian grudge. You know, enjoy Sandro Tonelli, man. You got your sign. You got your sign for the summer right there. And finally, I know you've said you've had many of them, but what has been your favorite moment as a fan of this club?
Favorite moment? I mean, there's been lots. I'm going to mention him again, actually. Tino Asprilla. I didn't think I would, but the hat-trick he scored against Barcelona. He played Barcelona in the Champions League. I think it was 97. Not really any chance of us beating Barcelona, really. I mean, in real terms. But we beat them 3-2, and Tino Asprilla scored a hat-trick. That was just mind-blowing to see. I was there. You know, seeing that Barcelona team, I think Figo and Rivaldo were playing as well. For us to beat that team was just impossible, but it happened, and I was there.
Oh, so wow.
An extremely special moment. Yeah, very memorable.
That is awesome.
Johnny, I mean, we beat Manchester United 5-0 as well. That's worth mentioning.
Oh, yeah. Well, that,
I'll never forget that one.
Was that at St. James's Park?
Yeah, and I was also there.
So you have your international and your domestic pieces together.
Love it. Yeah.
Johnny, thank you so much for wearing a Milan kit. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for making just really fucking awesome tunes, man. I appreciate this. I really enjoyed it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me. That's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Welcome anytime. See you soon, man.
See ya.
Follow us on Twitter at Curva Mundial Pod and subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.